Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings. Let it rise.
Good morning, friends. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Welcome. Phil Arnold here with you today, and I hope to provide a gemütlich atmosphere. For those of you who speak Italian, you know that's what your German friends say. Gemütlich. It means cozy, comfortable, pleasant, and friendly. So between the Monday morning alarm clock and the brewing of the coffee, me and the Faith Radio team here hope to provide a gemütlich atmosphere on this chilly spring morning. I was opening my Bible this morning to Matthew chapter 6, and Jesus says, do not worry. He said, therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. So if you're trying to get dressed for work this morning, I'm not sure if I would wear that shirt-tie combination. You might want to rethink that one. But for the most part, don't worry about what you wear. I grew up with four sisters, so I do remember putting my hand on the door handle to walk out, and one of them would usually say, you're not wearing that, are you? So that was kind of my fashion police. But we've got a great show today. We've got my friend Patrick Albanese almost on the studio line. He'll be coming up in just a minute. We're going to talk to him. And then Dr. Adam Carrington is going to bring us up to speed on all the political news that's going on over the weekend. And so we're going to have a great show. Thank you and welcome. If you're listening today from Hartford at 94.1 FM, we're just absolutely thrilled that you're with us in the listening family. And 93.1 FM in Waterloo. Good morning to all of our friends in Waterloo and in Madison at 104.7. Good morning. Nice to have you here. And, of course, in the Twin Cities at 90.7 FM. So we are so glad that you are listening, and thank you so much for doing that. Okay, we're going to have a great show. So we're going to bring Patrick Albanese on in just a minute and lots more to come. So thanks for listening. Be back in a minute with more.
What do you do when your dream dies? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. You had aspirations of doing and being something in your life, but now your dream just isn't possible. Maybe an accident or illness took your dreams away. Maybe a divorce or financial problems killed your dream. Every day, people are forced to make a choice. Hang on to a dead dream or reach for a new one. So how do you deal with the death of a dream? First, allow yourself to grieve. It's okay to feel badly or even terrible about your loss. Second, allow yourself to grow. Try new things. Experience new hopes. Third, allow yourself to grab. Grab hold of the next dream. Don't spend all of your time focusing on what you've lost, or you'll miss what you can have. Remember, your family first.
For more resources on today's topic, go to markmerrill.com. The Family Minute with Mark Merrill, helping families love well.
We're connecting faith and life together.
I was just scanning the radio, and Pastor Colin was on, and I heard his voice start speaking about Jesus, and I stopped at that station, and ever since then, it's been about 9 months. I'm literally like the only station I listen to. Now, thank you for the station and all the word that you spread to us, you know?
It's the intersection of faith and life. Faith Radio.
Good morning, everyone. 9 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. Bill Arnold here, and I've got my friend Patrick Albanese, I believe, on the phone. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning.
All right.
Are you able to hear me?
I hear you just fine. A little fuzzy, but actually sounds pretty good. So you just recently survived a birthday weekend. Your 8-year-old daughter, Ellie, had her big birthday, right?
My daughter turned 8. I am alive.
Yeah, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it wasn't for a lack of these kids trying to take me out.
I'm sure. But
these days, because of political correctness, the kids have to invite, if you bring invitations to school, you have to invite everybody in the class.
Oh.
And they showed up.
So the political correctness says
if you're going to invite friends from your class, you have to invite everybody.
You have to invite everybody.
I did not know
so
that.
They don't, so nobody feels left out.
And then I understand that as the host of the party, you need to have parting gifts for them. Is that true?
Yeah, now it's parting gifts for the kids
that attend the party.
We, of course, the inexpensive way out, the frugal move is the piñata.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, I know it's cultural appropriation, but we did it.
Mm-hmm.
We did it. And, you know, the kids, if they get a bag of candy and they've been sugared up properly, they tend to leave pretty happy. And I figure I should at least return these children to their parents in the condition they brought them to me.
Yeah, it's probably a good point. Now, I'm always impressed that the presents that kids get nowadays, it's amazing what they want, what they ask for, and what they receive. Now, when I was a when we were kids, Patrick, you know, our toys were like a wooden stick with a horse's head on the top.
Right, and a shirt. You always got a shirt from
grandma. You always got a shirt. Yeah, so you had to go make your own fun. Nowadays, kids get these amazing gifts. So it's definitely a different time.
My daughter yesterday scored more gifts for her 8th birthday than I did my entire childhood.
Wow.
I didn't even know what to do with all this stuff. It took up a room.
Yeah.
There were so many kids there.
Yeah.
So we're having a garage sale. I don't even know if she'll miss this stuff.
I'm not sure. Well, she needs to inventory it, and then she'll miss it.
Yeah.
All right. Lots of stuff going on in the news. Let's get to it. The first thing that kind of caught my attention was the display at Notre Dame when all the students walked out on Vice President Pence's speech.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things I think that's fantastic about that is if these kids are so proud of the move that they did, perhaps they should put that on their resume. Graduated from Notre Dame, walked out on the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how that works in the job market. Let's see if a potential employer is thinking, "Ooh, this is a kid with an attitude problem." You're getting a commencement speech from the vice president
of the United States.
Out because why?
Free speech,
you know,
issue.
Like stance on something. I'm not entirely certain why. You know, and I think if you had 100 kids or so doing it. Okay, put it on your resume. I remember when John Kerry threw some medals over a fence. Then years later, he decides to run for president and says, I got to get those back.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best story? Ah, here's the best one I can come up with. I threw somebody else's medals over the fence just in case I needed mine. He looked like they said he was swift-boated, but you say, no, you did something embarrassing when you were young. You didn't think ahead, and you paid a price for it.
Yeah, so let's fast forward, these kids are now parents themselves, and they're talking to their own children, and they say, so, Dad, when you graduated from Notre Dame, you walked out on the vice president's speech at graduation? Yes, son, I did. Okay, then you must be okay with me walking out on your lecture to me about being home by midnight.
Yeah, exactly. Again, like, if you're so proud of this, make sure you tell everybody. It's you know, I mean, I'm not saying I've done this yet because my kids are still young, but there may be some questions where they're going to say, Dad, did you ever stay out too late?
No.
No, exactly.
Actually, I had a pretty eventless childhood in terms of getting in trouble because I'm the 6th child of 8, and the 5 before me experimented with all sorts of shenanigans, and I'm a great observer.
Mm-hmm.
So I will actually be able to be honest with my kids and say, didn't do it. Didn't do that. Didn't do that. You're right. Hey, Dad, why should I listen to you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. The president, Donald of Arabia, seems to be getting applauded over in the Middle East. He's being treated quite well over there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I watch some Twitter feeds, and all of a sudden, after 8 years, I'm starting to see our more liberal compatriots saying things like, you know, these Middle Eastern countries don't treat women and gays very well. Like, you've been ignoring that for 8 years. You haven't said a word about it. We gave $400 billion pallets full of cash. That's your tax dollars and my tax dollars to one of the worst countries when it comes to women's rights, gay rights, you name it. You said not a thing. You said not a thing. And all of a sudden you're going, hey, you're cozying up to Saudi Arabia. You know, they don't treat women very nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess you're interested now. I forgot. There's a sort of a Republican in office right now.
Mm-hmm. And let's not forget that, you know, the Democrats, when they talk about impeachment, we need to be reminding everybody that they called for impeachment of GOP presidents in 1981, 83, 84, 91, 04, 05, 07.
That's because it worked out so well in the mid-70s.
Right.
Once they got one,
then
this should tell you something. You know, you feed the beast, and when they essentially took out Nixon, they thought, this is kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of fun because, you know, that leaves a bad taste in people's mouth, and then maybe we could be in power again.
Yeah.
And I just don't think there's anything there. I'm not, you know, especially this Comey issue. Lincoln, they got to be getting pretty nervous because if he's going to testify, he either has to back up what all these anonymous sources say, and then Comey's in trouble. It's like, you didn't mention any of this stuff, and
right. You
just look like a bitter ex-employee.
He
you know,
sure does.
Disgruntled, I believe is the
yeah.
word. Or he's going to have to contradict himself, and he's going to have to do his finessing thing. And this, let's not forget, this is the same guy that multiple times, he did it with Bill Clinton back in the 90s. He did it with Hillary Clinton, where he said, well, I can't really prove intent, so I guess there's no crime there. You go, okay, does your magical intent standard exist with Donald Trump, or are you, you know, a complete partisan hack?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any good thing that comes out of the Comey hearings. There's going to be... Once again, half the country is going to say, I hate this guy. The other half is going to say, I love this guy.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of which half is going to say what.
Patrick, let's pick up this conversation after the break. I still want to continue on the subject because I do find this interesting. We'll be back at 16 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us. Minutes after the hour. Happy Monday. So glad you're with us. Today is May 22nd. Really hard to believe that we are getting this close to the end of May already. And then June, July, and August. Such great months of the year because that is like summer, summer, and then more summer. And I love summer except for the being out in the sun part because of my fair skin. But for the most part, I love it. And this morning, I'm talking to my friend Patrick Albanese from West Des Moines. And we're always talking about the news that happens over the weekend and some of the ongoing stories that keep us interested. And, Patrick, as we look at the continuation of the James Comey investigation, it is fascinating to me that on May 3rd, under oath, he was talking about the FBI in a situation where we were told to stop something for a political reason, and he said, if we were ever asked to do that, that would be a very big deal. And he said, and I quote, it's not happened in my experience.
Yeah, and this is Mr. Note Taker. So,
yes.
Can he show up in front of the House and Senate and under oath this time say, yeah, I'd forgotten, gosh, this is amazing. I'd forgotten this one note I'd written myself where the president tried to influence me when it came to the Flynn investigation and Russia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, you forgot that? Does that become an acceptable excuse? We go back to Hillary Clinton when she was, I don't recall, I don't recall, I don't recall. And that is evidently, if you are in that political elite in Washington, D.C., that is an acceptable response, or I just remembered, or gosh, I found this note. I just don't know how he escapes a hearing with any shred of credibility. He's going to get destroyed whichever direction he goes.
Yeah, I think you're right on that.
A friend that leaked some of that info, he didn't really see the memo. We were just eating at a restaurant, and I go, I don't know, maybe the guy tried to. I don't know. I don't know which way this is going to go.
Mm-hmm. And if he is such a great note taker, it is interesting, where are all of your notes from Hillary? So it is going to be interesting to see.
Like,
he's not going to look good in this deal. Loretta Lynch.
After she met with Bill Clinton on the tarmac and say, okay, I just need to kind of clarify here. What happened there? You talked about golf, huh? You talk about grandchildren. All right, I'm good with that. Is that it? Does he get to write down his feelings again? because we heard about the other thing that got leaked where he said, gosh, I was hiding in the curtains because I didn't want to get hugged by the president. I don't know if you saw that video. He didn't get hugged by the president. It's like Trump leaned over and whispered something in his ear. I don't know. You're doing a great job, or watch your back. I don't know. But it's like he evidently supposedly had this habit of writing everything down. So it's like, all right, well, tell us what your feelings were when Bill Clinton met with Loretta Lynch. Did you write your feelings down then? Because this guy evidently puts his feelings down on paper. All right, I'm curious. How did you feel about Hillary Clinton breaking all those laws and how you were going to let her off the hook? How mm-hmm. did you feel?
Yeah, it is fascinating. He is going to be he's not going to look good when this whole thing is over.
Yeah, but like I say, one side is going to, you know, I guess, and if I'm just going to put my 2 cents in, adjusted for inflation, of course, so there's not a whole lot of value here.
No, it's pretty much
but
worthless.
I'm thinking to myself, the Democrats suddenly got quieter about impeachment talks and some of these things. And, you know, there's some rumblings. Maxine Waters, I think you can always count on her to give you a soundbite. But they've gotten a little bit quiet, which makes me think, oh, wait a second. No. We don't really want this investigated. We much prefer slinging accusations and innuendo. And between the New York Times and the Washington Post, they're leaking stories at an alarming rate, but all of them have this one thing in common. A source close to the investigation, we can't name anybody, but they say they saw a note. Well, they didn't see the note. They heard somebody tell them about a note that they saw about a meeting where notes were taken down, and they said that Trump called Comey a nut job.
Mm-hmm.
And for all we know, Trump said, this whole thing's getting nutty. And then you play that game of telephone, and next thing you know, they say nut job, and everybody runs with it. And what's particularly alarming is we haven't got the actual transcript, and people are assuming it's the truth, just like with the Comey thing where he said, you know, he supposedly wrote down that he was worried about whatever. Doesn't really matter. I'm thinking, well, James Comey's alive. His notes are available. Let's not even discuss what maybe happened. Why don't we go to him and say, give us the notes so we know exactly what happened? But we're not doing that. We're saying, no, we don't want to know. We'd rather speculate. More fun.
Yeah. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm finding
kind of different than when we were kids where people said, here's the actual memo. Here's what we got. We did our investigative reporting. This took us weeks, but we actually have it. Now they say, I don't need to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Just read it to me. I never saw it either. Okay,
yeah.
Well, what do you remember? Well, somebody else read it. They heard. They go, that's good enough. Put it in the news.
Yeah, and they're now letting a certain video footage go that's really not completely vetted. That just starts to whet people's appetite for the story. I think it was a interesting case in point of this guy that, as a joke, posts the video of this pig rescuing a goat from a petting zoo, which he said was, you know, just all made up. And it has had 8 million views right now and was the lead story on ABC News. And I go, come on, this thing made it to the top of the news cycle?
Oh, yeah, there was one a few years ago, similar thing. I think it was a dog rescuing a pig or something like that. And it took them 2 days to film it. And they had channels underneath the water so that the dog and the pig would all stay in these exact channels. And people said, this is the most heartwarming story. See, they're just like people. Like, well, not quite, although I would challenge some people to make it through that channel safely.
But they did say that even if the story is not true, people are dying to have something to believe in, which, again, I say, got to be careful what comes in. Because that's going to be something that could influence you. If you don't know God's truth, you don't know his word, you don't know what's counterfeit and what's real, that's when you're in trouble.
But you're kind of paraphrasing G.K. Chesterton, aren't you?
I am. But go ahead. Quote it.
If you don't believe in God, you believe in anything. And
that's right.
I mean, they had that viral video of Trump bowing before the Saudis, and he was just bending down because he's a tall man.
6'4".
To get a medal.
Right.
And they cut the video where they go, look at him bowing. Why, he's in the pocket of the Saudis.
Mm-hmm.
They were giving him a medal. You know, Obama got a peace prize. He didn't do anything. And you think, how is it to be in the newsroom and say, if you edit that properly, that will look like this. Go ahead and do it. That's not journalism. Those are not journalistic standards.
Yeah, I agree. Patrick, as always,
they know. People will run with it, and the truth can come out later, and it'll be too late.
Yeah. As always, it's great talking to you on Monday mornings. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
You bet. 27 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be right back. It's half past the hour. Good morning. On your Monday, I'll repeat once again, Matthew 6 says, therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear as you're getting ready. Okay? We'll get a little bit of news, and then we're going to talk to Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Good morning. 25 minutes until the top of the hour. It can be difficult for Christians to live out their faith in the workplace. Dr. Bill Peel clarifies what effective evangelism looks like at work.
One of the first things that you need to realize is that evangelism is a process and not an event. And actually confusing that can get you into serious trouble, because evangelism sometimes doesn't stop to think about what God is doing in the other person's life. Sometimes we're a little more interested in getting the message out, and that actually can be quite inappropriate in the workplace. And 1 Peter 3:15 gives us some real important insights in there. Leading up to that verse, it's a wonderful verse that's quoted often by evangelists, that we're to always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that's within us. But leading up to that passage is a whole lifestyle that actually attracts people's attention to our faith. And then in verse 15, the part that I didn't quote there was that we're supposed to give a reason for the hope within us when asked. And so the first part of sharing your faith in the workplace is living your faith out in front of people, such that it actually makes our faith in Jesus Christ apparent and transparent to people. It begins with the quality of our work. It issues forth in the character of our life, of Christ's likeness, and then in real compassion for people before we begin to talk wisely about our faith. And so that's how it really starts.
If you want to hear that full interview, it is available on our website at myfaithradio.com. All you have to do is search Workplace Grace, because we're about ready to get out there today and face the beginning of our work week. And hopefully you had a restful weekend, so you can show up, put a big smile on your face, and let people know you care about them and you love working with them. And they will hopefully see something in you that they're going to be attracted to. So we'll take a short break. When we come back, Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College.
In the rush of contemporary life, it's easy to forget the ancestors of our faith, those who stood firm for the gospel of the early church. This is Jim Garlow. Unfortunately, we have little time or interest in people who lived in the second or third centuries. Yet we owe these ancestors of our faith, Justin Martyr, Tertullian, Origen, and others, on whose shoulders we stand, to pause at least long enough to realize what they did. If they had not been faithful in articulating the gospel, in many cases dying for their stand, you and I might not have the gospel. They brilliantly defended what we so often take for granted. Our American culture has become increasingly pagan-like, and new defenders of the faith are needed. Those who'll study the skills and understanding of these early apologists. As the church is able to defend its faith, it becomes stronger. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Good morning. It's 20 minutes until the top of the hour. Every couple of weeks, I get the pleasure of talking to Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College, political professor, all-around great guy. And he's got a very significant date coming up in his life, which would be, let's see, June 18th, which, by the way, is Father's Day, which, by the way, will be the first Father's Day he will celebrate as a father. Isn't that right, Adam?
That's right. I hopefully I'll have earned it.
How have the last 2 weeks been with your new daughter?
They've been very good. She's been a really good baby. She's been very good to us on eating, sleeping, all those things. I mean, sure, we'd love to get more sleep than we've been getting, but no, it's been a real joy.
Mm-hmm. And just a big bundle of love. You feel God's provisions and grace, and what a joy, huh?
Absolutely. She's been an amazing gift, and we, you know, like I said, we're just as happy as can be, and it's amazing how quickly you come to love someone that you didn't even know a few weeks ago.
Yeah, not the truth.
That's been the case with her.
Yeah.
And we're just hoping to raise her to know God well and to know him personally, and we'll see, you know, what he does on his end with that.
All right, this is going to be a nice smooth transition. Let's go from your adorable baby to the Republicans feeling probably a little sense of relief that Robert Mueller is going to serve as the special prosecutor.
I think they're relieved that he is. Of course, there were large segments, you know, within the Trump administration, within the Republican Party itself, including Paul Ryan, really many of them saying that there shouldn't be a special prosecutor at all, that there was no reason for it. But given the fact that the FBI has now appointed this special prosecutor to look into this, the Russian interference or whatever it did with the election, I think having Mueller as the go-to guy is going to be good for them, because, you know, he's got a long track record with the FBI. He directed it for about 12 years. He seems like a fairly straight shooter. I think a lot of the people saying, oh, this could be dangerous for Trump, or oh, this is great for Trump, a lot of it has to do with whether they think there's anything to be found.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good sign if that's how you're looking at it, because that means the guy himself, the one doing the investigating, you think will be a fairly responsible person.
Mm-hmm. Adam, I was talking to my previous guest a little bit about this, and you know, if Donald Trump told James Comey to stop investigating, as this memo alleges, why did Comey then, on May 3rd, under oath, talk about saying it would be a big deal to tell the FBI to stop doing something? And the situation was, if you were told to stop, do something for a political reason, that would be a very big deal. And Comey said, it's never happened in my experience. What are they looking at? What are we investigating?
If you're asking what we're investigating, at least for the special prosecutor, the main target that they're looking at is not what happened with Comey. It's Russia's involvement in the election, and whether there was any collusion or working across national boundaries between the Trump campaign and Russia, whether these other things about how Comey was fired or what he heard or was told by the president come into play, those would be side issues that aren't directly involved in what he's doing. Now, why did Comey do that if he has the memo? That is a very interesting question, and when he testifies in public, as it looks like, he's going to have to answer that. Is it because he refused? Is it because there's nothing there that he claims that was what was said, but it didn't happen? Is it because he's angry that he got fired? That's the other option. The third option is that he didn't think he would be believed until he got fired, and that's going to be a lot of he said, she said out in public, which probably is not going to look very good for Comey or for any of the other people involved.
Mm-hmm.
These things are this is where you have the difficulty of disentangling human beings' sinful motives from what they will claim to be their good, true, beautiful attempts to serve the public good. And quite frankly, with human beings, you're going to see a little bit of both. And I think Comey, we're going to see how much of each is going on.
Mm-hmm. Adam, it seems like when you hire or appoint a special prosecutor, they get a fairly large budget and a staff And they have to go find something. And don't they often find something that they weren't originally intended to be pursuing in the first place?
Well, they often do sort of expand to fill the hole that is there, and then expand it if they can. You know, the investigation into some of President Clinton's bad deals, possibly back in his history, bad financial deals, turned into the Monica Lewinsky scandal. For those who remember that, if you can go back even further, the Iran-Contra scandal with Ronald Reagan didn't so much go outside its purview as it dragged on for, I believe, 7 years. I think the scandal happens in 86. The final report isn't given till 93. And I think the bigger problem with this is, while I think Republicans and Trump and others can be a little relieved at who was selected to be a special prosecutor, I think there are some questions as to whether, again, what I said earlier, their question whether a special prosecutor was the right route.
Mm-hmm.
Because what often happens is these persons get very wide power, very independent power to do what they want. And I think something, if people are really interested to look at, is Justice Scalia wrote a dissent in 1988 in a case called Morrison v. Olson about the independent counsel law. That's what Ken Starr and the Monica Lewinsky investigation was done under, and really brought up the question of if we have these independent prosecutors that basically aren't under any branch of government. They aren't being controlled by the executive, who is supposed to take care that law enforcement is being brought out. They aren't being under any of the other judicial or legislative branches. Isn't that a problem with separation of powers? Aren't we getting our toes into an even bigger issue beyond whether one president or one official did something wrong and undermining the tripartite system that says that the executive branch should be in charge of law enforcement? And mm-hmm. I think that's something that too often Republicans and Democrats agree or disagree on based on whether it's their partisan interest. And I think we should be thinking more constitutionally about as far as how separation of powers protects the larger necessities of liberty.
Mm-hmm. Adam, I always learn so much when you're on the show. I have a little post-it note on my computer that says, when Adam talks, Bill says nothing.
Well, I don't know if that's the best approach.
Oh, trust me, it is. Trust me, it is. We'll take a little break. When we come back, lots more with Dr. Adam Carrington. Thanks for listening. Be right back. Minutes until the top of the hour. Good morning. Happy Monday. We're so glad you're with us today. We're talking to Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. And Adam, I'm just real curious about this brewing civil war that's going on the political right, about how to approach President Trump and the criticism of him. We got the anti-Trump and then the anti-anti-Trump sides. That's kind of crazy.
Sure, and I'll even say I read an article later this weekend about people that claim to be anti-anti-anti-Trump. It's almost getting to be, it's almost getting to be like cartoonish as far as that goes. It's like a Monty Python sketch. But this sort of brewing civil war is really one among those who aren't fully on board with Trump, who maybe voted for him or didn't vote for him, but consider themselves part of the conservative movement. At the same time, they don't necessarily align with everything he puts forward, or they don't entirely align with his temperament. Among those, there's been this division, and it's gotten pretty nasty in how they've gone after each other about, and I think it's along the biggest line is along the lines of, even if you're not a huge fan of Trump, even if you're not a fan at all, who should be getting the most criticism, him or the media and the political left? And who should be you concentrating your sort of verbal fire on? And it's been fascinating to watch that there's one side that says, well, it should be the political left. I think these are the sort of the anti-Trumpers. And they say that the left and the media are the bigger threat. They're attacking the Constitution. They're attacking the family. They're attacking ordinary Americans is the way the argument goes. And even if Trump is imperfect, that he is still fighting those same people. And even if you're not a huge fan of him, now, of course, again, this doesn't include those who and there are many of them who are full-on supporters of him, but even those who don't love him say, this is he's fighting the right people. We should be generally supportive of him.
Mm-hmm.
The anti-Trumpers seem to be arguing, no, yet while we still should be criticizing the left, that Trump is a threat because either one, he's doing a bad enough job that he may discredit conservatism, and that's a threat that needs to be taken into account, or that he'll change conservatism into something that those who have identified as conservatism don't want. And because of that, he needs to be taken to task more, or at least more consistently. And really, who you think needs is the bigger threat and in which ways, I think, has caused some pretty nasty, some people who have been friends in the past to become pretty publicly nasty with each other over the last couple of weeks in particular.
Yeah. Adam, you know, just for the record, Democrats have called for the last four GOP presidents to be impeached. And are these calls to impeach President Trump really a fair assessment of his performance? Or, you know, what are all the motives that are going on right now regarding all this?
Well, I think that there's a mixture of bad motives, of course, in the sense of people were calling for Obama to be impeached, a number of Republicans. So as a political ploy and also misinformation, I saw, there's information being spread around and getting a lot more play on the political left this past weekend, the claim that the Supreme Court had informed President Trump before he left for his international trip that he was formal impeachment proceedings were being brought against him. And if you look at the Constitution, Article 1 and Article 2, for just skim it for about 45 seconds, you'll see that's not the way this works. That's not the way impeachment even works. So that's not just bad play, that's sort of ignorance of what our system, how our system goes about these things. And I think if you look at how or why someone can be impeached, there is some debate about how broad or narrow it should be. But in general, the idea has been because the text says that it should be for treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm.
That you really have to find some massive illegal action of some kind, or, well, really, illegal action of some kind. You know, with President Clinton, it was, did he lie under oath and obstruct justice? And I think that right now, if you look at the accusations against President Trump, you know, it's plausible to argue that he's done some things badly, that even his administration is struggling with doing things competently on certain issues. That argument could be made. I'm not saying it's airtight.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that he has that there's some smoking gun, that he has broken a law, that he has engaged in treason, bribery, or some high crime and misdemeanor is extremely thin to non-existent at this point.
Mm-hmm. So right now it's going to be real interesting how all this comes out with the special prosecutor. And I don't know, how long does this usually take? 6-9 months before we're going to get any details or any results?
It depends upon the particular prosecutor. I think and what he finds or doesn't find. So this could drag on for years. This
Ooh.
Could be only a matter of months.
And I don't have time for that.
We will. Yeah, most Americans don't. And I think I personally think they might find some shady dealings in the president's past, shady dealings among his associates with Russian persons of ill repute. But the idea that there was actually collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians, so far there just isn't much information. So this could be end up on impeachment level being much ado about nothing. Now, whether things will come out that make one think twice about, you know, President Trump's business dealings or the people he chooses to associate with, I mean, we'll see. But as far as something actual impeachable, I wouldn't hang my hat on something coming out, at least in this investigation.
Mm-hmm. And Professor, the grade on the president's speech in Saudi Arabia over the weekend?
Oh, see, that's hard. And I don't mean to punt on it a little bit, but it depends upon which way you thought he was supposed to approach Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
For those who believe that he needs to approach it on conciliatory, trying to keep Saudi Arabia an ally, trying to work with them, make them a partner in things going on in the Middle East, I think you give him, you know, B+.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a solid speech. But if you're someone who really liked him saying that Saudi Arabia was responsible for 9/11, that there are all these abuses, that and that we need to be saying radical Islamic terrorism is the problem, he didn't do any of that. He really was, and I think if that's what you wanted, you give him a pretty low grade.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where you have to decide what's the best way to approach Saudi Arabia, hard line or making them a friend.
Yeah. Adam, thanks so much. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you again real soon.
Sounds great. Thank you.
You bet. A couple minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back. I did read a little story this morning that the president was given a fairly good grade on his speech over in Saudi Arabia, but he failed to ask the question why Muslim societies produce so many terrorists, because that's where they come from. All right, we will talk to Adam Carrington again soon. He's such a delight. He's so full of knowledge. We'll be back just a minute.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.